Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, a couple of nighttime entertainment options are glowing away, ticket prices could be going up, Disneyland turns 67.
Imagineering opening up the timeline for Galaxy's Edge. We finish our conversation with Fletch about board game creation and more. DL Weekly starts now.
This is your captain speaking to you from the wheelhouse. I'd like to welcome all of you aboard the DL Weekly podcast. For safe passage on our trip, please do not sit or climb on the outside railings, and be sure to watch your children. The water can be unpredictable in these parts, and we'd sure hate to lose any of you.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of July 20th, 2022. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tig Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to Brandon S. and Lane E. for becoming official Weekly Tiers, and for Lonnie S. for increasing her support on Patreon. Our supporters get some pretty fun perks like DL Weekly swag, bonus content, and access to our Discord community. We have a book club coming up. What is it?
We do. Our book club is going to be on July 20th, so that's the same day that this lovely episode is getting aired to everyone. But yeah, we are hanging out with Lynn from The Sweep Spot to talk about one of the books that he co-wrote with his podcast co-host, Ken. So we're very excited about it.
Yeah. Well, if you'd like to get in on that or have some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dealweekly.net/support to join the community.
Well, our friends over at All Enchanting Ears have extended their sale on 3D printed ears. Now through the end of the month, all 3D printed ears are 25% off. Go check them out. They're beautiful. They're so fun. Of course, they're all very cool and Disney themed. We've got light up ears for the Main Street Electrical Parade. We have Pirates coins. We have different Haunted Mansion versions, character versions, Marvel versions. You name it, they got it. Go check them out. AllEnchantingEars.com.
Well, we have some details about our D23 meetup. We are going to keep repeating this until D23, probably, just so you guys are aware.
We want to make sure you all know so you can all come and say hi.
Yes. So we're having a weekly tier meetup at the Disneyland Hotel at the Fireplace near Trader Sam's on Saturday, September 10th from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. The D23 Expo is that day, and it gets out at 7, so we wanted to have enough time to get over there by 8 o'clock. We'll be there from 8 to 10. If you stop by for any amount of time, please feel free, if you can. We will also be at the expo the entire weekend, so if you see us around, feel free to say hi. We love saying hi to everybody.
Yeah, we do. And another thing I want to mention with the meetup, for those of you that have been able to attend a meetup, you already know this, but we try and always grab a group picture. So if you're able to stop by, hopefully you'll be able to be around for the group picture. We kind of do it when we think about it, so it's not like we have a set time. Maybe down the road we'll get a little bit more organized and have the picture at a certain time so we make sure everyone can be a part of it. But we do also do a group picture. It's very fun.
It is.
Now let's get to the news.
Well, the Main Street Electrical Parade and the Disneyland Forever fireworks are glowing away again at the end of summer. September 1st will be the last day to catch both of these classic entertainment options. World of Color and Fantasmic will continue on their regular schedules. Halloween time starts at the resort on September 2nd, so this is making way for the Halloween Screams fireworks.
This gives me, I have like a whirlwind of emotions with this because it's as sad as it is to say goodbye to the Disneyland Forever fireworks and the Main Street Electrical Parade, I'm very, very excited for the Halloween entertainment options. Halloween Screams, like Tag mentioned, will be starting on September 2nd. It will be projection-only shows, weeknights, and then Fridays, Saturday, or weekend nights. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday evenings will be with fireworks too. So very fun show. Honestly, we've seen it both ways. We've seen it projections only and with fireworks. Super fun both ways.
Yeah, Main Street Electric Play is going away again. I'm sure we'll be back at some point.
Well, the other thing too,
but I don't think Disneyland Forever will be back.
I kind of think the Main Street Electrical Parade probably will be back because they did just invest in that new finale float, which gives me hope because remember when we were kind of speculating before, you're like, what if they upgraded all of the lights for the entire parade? Maybe this might be the start of something and they start
maybe
breathing a little new life into the parade.
Let's move it to DCA and let's bring back Magic Happens.
I still think, see, I would go the other way. I'd leave the Main Street Electrical Parade in Disneyland and I would bring Paint the Night to DCA. I don't know why,
I said
but
Magic Happens.
Oh, because
Magic Happens has night and day.
Yeah.
So put Magic Happens back at Disneyland, put the Electrical Parade at DCA. Because Parade's been at DCA before.
It has. It's not, it just feels more at home at Disneyland, I feel. I want Paint the Night at DCA.
I want Paint the Night back, and DCA would be a great place for it, yes.
Because I think DCA makes a little bit more sense because you've got a lot of the DCA prop, like the DCA characters. So you've got a Cars section, you've got a Monsters section.
Magic Happens in the day, Electrical Parade at night.
There you go.
And then Paint the Night over at DCA.
Perfect. Disney, I hope you're listening. Ticket prices could be going up soon for Disneyland, but not because of Disney. A proposed ordinance by the Anaheim City Council would add a 2% admissions tax to all tickets sold to any venue that holds 15,000 or more people. This would add $2 to $4 to each ticket for a one-day, one-park ticket, depending on the season. If approved by the council, it would be on the ballot for voters in November.
So, not Disneyland's fault. A lot of places do this type of thing where they do some type of like tax. You know, the resort area already for like hotels and stuff has a resort area tax and everything like that. You know, Anaheim, I don't know, man. Part of me is like good for Anaheim for trying to get some more money wherever they can. However, at the same time, just work with Disney. I don't know. Well, 2%, I guess, isn't that bad, but ticket prices are already pretty expensive.
Yeah. And I mean, $2 to $4 for a 1 day, one park ticket isn't huge. I'll be honest, I did not look into, you know, the reasoning on, because it seems interesting to me that it's a very specific place that this ticket price would or this tax would affect. So you've got Disneyland Resort, of course. Sports stadiums would be another thing that this would affect. So it's not just the city picking on Disneyland. It's just all of the high capacity places. But it's interesting because, I mean, that would add up to quite a bit going into the city. And I'm okay with that as long as the city of Anaheim then turns around and uses that appropriately and, you know, does good things for the area. Because, right, we love Anaheim. We love Disneyland. We don't want the city to suffer.
Right.
We want the city to be flourishing as well. So I'm not going to pretend to know what the politics are or what the reasoning is behind this, but I could get behind this as long as it's going, you know, as long as it's being used appropriately and using to better the community.
Well, we'll see what the voters say if it gets that far. They are voting on it the night we record this. Mm-hmm. So we don't know for sure. By the time this episode gets posted, we'll know if this even matters anymore. But if it does go through, it still goes to voters in November. So the voters really will have the final say. Well, on Disneyland's 67th birthday, the red car trolley returned to Buena Vista Street. Shortly after it opened, it broke down for part of the day before returning to service later in the day. There's only one of the trolleys running for now. The second trolley is not ready for use at this time. The red car trolley will be brought on stage before park opening and will make trips back and forth to Hollywoodland, never entering Avengers Campus or going backstage when the park is open.
This, you know, this is feels like such a small thing, but I just think it's so exciting. I love the look of the trolley. I love it. I know people complain that it is a large vehicle, so going up and down the street does take up quite a bit of space. So it isn't as easy to walk down the street when the trolley is going versus making sure that you kind of stick to the sides and stick to the walkways perhaps. But I love kinetic energy and I love movement and I just think that this brings charm to the area. I look forward to hopefully them announcing that they're going to bring back the show that was with the trolley. I can't remember if
the
it was
news,
like the news.
The news news something boys.
Was it just the news boys?
Might have been the
news boys. I keep thinking like it's not the newsies. That's what's stuck in my head. But the trolley boys. Trolley boys?
Red car trolley newsboys.
Both. The Red Car Trolley Newsboys show was so fun. That Suitcase and a Dream song always got stuck in my head. Now it's stuck in my head now from saying it.
It just happened to me too. Thank
But it's just, it's so fun. It's just so fun. I like it.
And it brings Mickey out and everything.
Yep. Powerful. Yep. I always try to ride the red trolley when I see it just because, not because I need to. I just think it's a fun experience.
I feel like I literally have only ridden it like twice.
I like the experience of it. It's like a Main Street vehicle. Can you walk faster than the trolley? You can, yes.
Yeah, it's the experience. You can walk faster than any of the Main Street vehicles, too, but they're still fun to ride.
Exactly. Well, there is a disturbance in the timeline in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. For the first time since the land opened, two different stories with two different time frames will be happening at once. Boba Fett and Fennec Shand, now along with Grogu and the Mandalorian, are seen walking around the land, with characters from the sequel trilogy also present. So how does Disney deal with this time bending? Imagineering is using quote-unquote story bubbles. Basically, as long as the stories unfold to guests and don't interact with each other, all is good.
Yeah, so they kind of, Scott Trowbridge was in an interview with the OC Register and basically was talking about how you can have these different things happening kind of at the same time in the same land. The land's very big. As long as their kind of story bubbles don't overlap or intertwine, you as the guest can be walking through and experiencing this, like, moment in time of the story, basically. And so, you know, as long as Boba Fett isn't hanging out with
Kylo Ren
or whatever, fine. This does...
Where Grogu's not hanging out with... he could hang out with Chewie.
But what's interesting about all of this is they said that they're kind of changing their tune. Now, Scott Trowbridge, who was the head of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, like, when they were developing it and everything, was saying that, oh, we never locked it into a certain time. It could have, like, always been things like, it would be silly of us to keep it one specific time frame and all of this stuff, which kind of goes against everything I think that they had said before.
Yeah.
So they're like, the only time it doesn't make sense, the argument he has now is, would you maybe see Anakin Skywalker there? Well, we know that in one of the Vader stories, the Thrawn books, he goes there with Thrawn. So it's possible that Anakin might show up sometime because it fits. But characters that would not have any business ever going to Black Spire Outpost, like, why would we put them there? Now, he did not say any characters would not be going there, and he didn't say any characters that would be going there. He was just giving examples of things that could work. So I like the fact that they're opening this up and they're doing the story bubble thing, but we'll see how it kind of works out. Honestly, I don't think the average guest cares if you see Kylo Ren over here, then later you walk over there and you see Darth Vader.
Yeah.
The diehards might, but I feel like others don't.
I think there is space to have multiple stories unfolding and have multiple of these story bubbles, but there are things that I think of that would be a little weird, not to everybody, but like if Han Solo walks past and says hi to Kylo Ren, like that would be
that would be
a little bit too much, because that you've got big time gaps there.
But you could have Han Solo chilling around the Falcon with Chewie
and just make sure Kylo doesn't go over.
And so part of the story was that they've talked about how the characters and everything are organized in such a way that they're not out and in those areas. Like, they communicate, Boba Fett's over here, so Kylo Ren should stay over here.
Right. Well, and really, Kylo kind of sticks to that one.
Right, with his ship or whatever.
Yeah, he's kind of in the one corner with his ship.
And Chewbacca seems to stay by the Falcon or in the, like, Rise of Resistance kind of wooded area.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like Fennec and Boba stay pretty tight around the marketplace area, which also makes sense. So, yeah, there's definitely space. And you could even do a rotation with the Falcon. You could have Chewie and Rey working on the Falcon, or you could have Han out there with the Falcon. Anyway, I like that they're opening it up and making this bigger than just, like,
one
you said,
specific
this
time
one
frame.
Little tiny slice in time. I like that. Since they weren't able to do the original plan, which I can't even remember what it was supposed to be. It was so amazing and much different than what it ended up being, because it was supposed to be way more interactive.
Yeah, we still don't have droids running around and interacting with people.
You were supposed to, like, go through the attractions and, like, when you went to the cantina, how you did, they would know how you just did on the Smuggler's Run attraction, and you'd have character interactions based on other character. It was kind of like, it's basically what they did with the Star Cruiser.
But see, this is what I said, I think, back when we started talking about Galaxy's Edge, was I was like, I don't know logistically how you do this. Yeah.
Well, and, like, we're so off topic right now, I apologize. But the Star Cruiser, they were able to do that through quote-unquote data pads. So that's how you kind of have that information stored, and how the characters know, you know, kind of which side you are on and can send you on these different quests or whatever. So they kind of were able to accomplish that with the Star Cruiser, but I don't, with just an average guest walking in and out of a park, I think it's much, much more difficult. So I am excited. The other thing too, this goes in line with all of the rumors about Tomorrowland getting a rehaul, is, you know, there's a lot of Star Wars that's still in Tomorrowland. Right. There's also a lot of Pixar in Tomorrowland, and there's dedicated areas for those now, mm-hmm. whereas before there wasn't, and that's why they lived in Tomorrowland. So this does, I feel, open it up that some of the Star Wars characters that are currently able to be seen in Tomorrowland can move back to Galaxy's Edge mm-hmm. if they decide to change things.
I don't know. I'm going to ask you. You probably don't know either. Producer James might maybe know. Have they ever had Luke Skywalker as a meet and greet anywhere?
Not that I know of. And I'm not even thinking. I'm thinking like during like specific party nights. Because right, some of the after hour parties we get to see characters that
you don't
normally get to see. And I don't think... I'm trying to think as Luke or Leia.
I don't think so.
A meet and greet, not,
and no Han either,
or Yoda.
Yeah,
I think
it'd be interesting
Chewie
to have
and Darth Vader are our original,
and those are like full costume mm-hmm, folks. Yeah, mm-hmm.
And of course stormtroopers.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. Well, the Downtown Disney Salettas have a new addition that helps provide some context. New signage and a QR code at each of the displays now inform guests what the display is and what it represents. Previously, it was unclear what some of the displays were about.
Love this, love this, love this. When we first reported on this, it's been a couple weeks now. We reported on it because the Parks blog had this really beautiful article written that explained all of this. And I thought that was so cool, but I just really felt like it's wonderful to have it out there for everyone to see. But unless you're there with your phone and know that this wonderful description of what this all represents and means is, you know, in front of you, you mm-hmm. may not understand what it is you were looking at. So I think this was very well needed. The signing is, this is going to sound ridiculous, but I think it's beautiful. And it ties back into the family Madrigal because it has like little butterfly accents on it. So I appreciate the little details on the signs because it just ties into the overall story of why the Salettas are there. And yeah, anyways,
my
I think
only
that's great.
Criticism is they put this nice QR code, but then they put like a novel of information.
So, but you have the QR. So I think that's perfect because if you're not a person that wants to read it off your phone, you can stand there and you can read about the display from this, you know, very detailed informational sign that's next to it. Or if you're someone who doesn't need to stand and read it there, you just want to scan it and read it at your leisure, then you can.
Sure.
So, or maybe if there's a crowd of people and you're too far away to be able to see the small print, because it does have it is a very long description for some of these. If you don't, you know, if there's maybe a group in front of it and you want to read it, you can scan it, read it on your phone and continue on. I think it's great.
And okay, so I was wondering when you scan this, where was it going to take you? Was it going to take you specifically to that? It takes you to the Disney Parks blog post.
Beautifully written Disney Parks blog post. I'm glad that they're incorporating that.
Yeah, they literally just link to that article.
They're beautiful, though. I think the team did a really nice job with these. I
don't
think they will still be there, but I do hope that we'd be able to see them in person when we're out for our D23 trip. But I'm sure it will be switched over to a Halloween theme by the time we're there. So if you have a chance, please go and visit these for us. Let us know what you think. Dole Whip fans, unite. And mark your calendars. July 21st is Dole Whip Day. Dole Whips are available all around the world at Disney parks and resorts. Alani, Disney Cruise Line, and domestic Disney parks on both coasts are great locations to get this frosty treat. The Dole Whip debuted at the Magic Kingdom in Florida back in 1984. The Disney Parks blog has a recipe for guests to create the iconic treat. Visit the link in the show notes to make one at home.
This is sort of tangentially related to this. I do want to talk about this in a minute, but did you ever get back to Starbucks and try the specific treat?
I'm not very happy with our local Starbucks now. So they're out. So we have two locations.
Because what is the concoction?
So it's called, what is it called? The Paradise Refresher.
Okay.
And so you're supposed to order, the menu item is the Paradise Refresher.
Yep.
And you're supposed to add a scoop of like a vanilla powder. And then there's also this cold foam cream stuff that they put on some of the other drinks. You're supposed to ask to add those two. And that is what makes the drink taste more like a Dole Whip than it does just off the menu as it is. Off the menu as it is, I have tried because I was not aware that you were supposed to add a couple of things to make it more
Dole
Whip-y.
How was just the refresher?
It was good. It didn't give me true Dole Whip vibes. Sure. You've got the pineapple there, but the added things give you that vanilla and creaminess that the Dole Whip has. So I was really excited to try it. And my plan with the added things, my plan was to do this to honor Disneyland's 67th birthday from afar.
Sure.
And yes, the two Starbucks locations nearest to me were out. So I was very sad. I'm hoping the ingredients will be back in stock by the 21st so that I can enjoy one on National Dole Whip
Day. Okay, so you missed the birthday, so you're going to try for Dole Whip Day now.
Yes.
Okay.
Starbucks, I'm looking at you.
I want to try this. Here's the thing.
Otherwise, plan B, Rudy's. We have a drive-in here that has their version. They call it official Dole Whip. It is not Disneyland Dole Whip. It's good. It's close. It is a pineapple soft serve, so that's my plan B.
Here's my problem. I want to try this, but I feel snooty if I'm ordering like extra things with things. So I feel like by going up and like, I want this with a splash of this and extra that, I feel like I'm that person that the person behind the register is like, really? You can't just get the refresher, huh? This is the only thing I do at coffee shops is I will ask for like a hot chocolate, but I will ask for it lukewarm because I want to actually be able to drink it. And that's like the only modification I ever make. Well, two iconic attractions are getting some new merchandise. A new pair of Haunted Mansion ears featuring a bow with the purple wallpaper print, a black top hat with HM monogrammed on the side, and the striped pattern from the cast member costumes on the ears with some neon green bats. The Haunted Mansion is embroidered on the band on one side. The ears are on sale at the Pieces of Eight shop for $29.99, but not to be outdone, the new Lounge 5 backpack with Pirates of the Caribbean is also on sale. The backpack is white leather, featuring the iconic jail cell scene with the pirates attempting to get the keys from the dog, which also features a charm of a key kind of hanging off and a bone hanging off as well. So guests can get that one for $75, although the Disney Food Blog said that when they were there, they were flying off the shelves, so who knows if they're still there.
I apologize to all of my Haunted Mansion and Ears fans. Loungefly backpacks are not my thing. However, this backpack is beautifully done. Do you not, when you look at this, just hear the whistling and like, does this not just transport you to that scene? I can hear the, like, here boy, I can't whistle. Like, I can just, it transports me to that scene in the attraction. And that's pure magic to me that looking at a backpack can pull me into the attraction like that.
I don't know if it pulls me into the attraction, but it is a gorgeous backpack.
It's so beautiful. This neat. I want this on like a t-shirt or something.
That'd be cool.
It's beautiful. I love how it's mostly black and white and they just have a little bit of red accents on the pirates just to make them it's gorgeous. It's so gorgeous. I'm sad that the Haunted Mansion ears launched about the same time because the Haunted Mansion ears just, they're not as good as this backpack. This backpack is so good.
They should make a Haunted Mansion backpack like this with like some concept art or something, because this looks like concept art almost of something Haunted Mansion there.
It has the feel of pirates, but it's not like, sometimes it's like, I don't know, like kind of gritty because it's pirates. This is like, it's elegant. It is elegant. Upscale pirates. I don't know. I have feelings about this bag. It's just not something I get excited about, and I love it.
Are you going to buy one if it's still there?
No, I won't buy. I will not buy one. I will admire from afar because Loungefly bags, they're too small for how much stuff. I like to bring a full-size water bottle. I can't fit my ears in it. That's why I have my Designer Park Co. bag now so that I can have all of my stuff. But man, this thing, it's gorgeous. I want this print on something else I can buy.
Well, let's move on because I feel like you're just going to keep
fawning over this. I'll just keep going. It's a nice backpack.
I agree with you. The ears. The ears are just fine.
I was excited about the ears because I thought that they were a unisex ear until I realized. Because there's like the little hat box ghost hat on it. But then there's also a bow.
Yep.
So I know we have a lot of fans of the Haunted Mansion that bows aren't their thing. So I was really excited hoping it was more of a gender neutral set of ears. Don't get me wrong, I like the bow because I love the Haunted Mansion wallpaper. But I think the fact that the main print as the cast member costume, I love those that stripe pattern. So I think that's really cool. Okay, I'll stop gushing about merch now. Some Weekly Tears listening might have wondered what it would be like to have a corn dog for breakfast. Well, wonder no more. The breakfast corn dog is now available for $9.29 at the Corn Dog Castle in Disney California Adventure. It's a breakfast sausage and egg wrapped in corn dog batter, topped with powdered sugar and raspberry jelly, and served with a mandarin orange or small bag of chips.
So the only thing I would try this because it sounds interesting to me.
Yeah.
However, the one thing that the Disneyland News Today commented on, which would be my same complaint, is it's kind of small.
It is. And it didn't look small until there's a photo of the person holding it in their hand. It almost looks like it's a little like...
It's like a corn dog bite.
It almost a little awkward to eat because the stick is... There's not very much stick coming out of it. So you kind of can only have two fingers on the stick. I was all for this. Oh, I was so excited for this until I realized there was... I'm not an egg person. I don't like eggs. If this would have been just like a breakfast sausage corn dog.
So here's what I think.
The drizzle. Oh,
here's what I think they should have done is they should have put a breakfast sausage inside. Mm-hmm. And then instead of corn dog batter, they should have done like they do at McDonald's where they do like a pancake or a waffle batter. A waffle batter would have been good. Mm. And then done the drizzle with powdered sugar. That would have been amazing because... One of the things with breakfast food is it's not very easy to eat. You got like eggs and sausages. Yeah. Like it's not, like you can't walk around as easily and eat that. A chimichanga is a good thing for that. But a corn dog like that would be wonderful. Uh-huh. Telling you, Disney.
So you would take the egg out too? Or maybe they have variations. Maybe you have one with egg, one without egg.
Maybe. I'm really picky about my eggs because I like my eggs dry. And a lot of times when you get like scrambled eggs... Like, I can't eat, like, a sunny side up. It's too, like, I don't like the runniness. But a lot of times when they do scrambled eggs, they still make them kind of juicy, I guess. And I don't like that. I want them, like, dry.
You want them well done.
Well, I told you when we were on the brunch cruise thing that we did, that was good because it was just dry enough. Like, I wanted more dry, but it was fine. Like, I could eat them.
Dry eggs. Who would have thought that on DL Weekly you would hear the dryness and ooiness of eggs be discussed?
Well, and then they have really weird things. Like they have like powdered dry eggs. Like what do you even use that for? Anyway, the Disney Food Blog wanted everyone making plans to visit Disneyland or anywhere in Southern California years in advance to take some information into account before booking anything.
Some of us are planners, okay?
Well, if you're planning for 2028, I'm wondering. The 2028 Summer Olympic Games will be in Los Angeles from July 14th through July 30th, with the Paralympic Games running from August 15th through the 27th. Again, this is 6 years away in 2028, but a long heads up for this one.
I do think this is important because it coincides with Disneyland's birthday. July 17th is within this time frame.
Yes, yes.
So that is important because so if you are a person that always needs to be and wants to make sure that you're at the parks on the day to celebrate the birthday or the anniversary,
Do you think that people would go before and after those dates?
I don't know. And the thing that I wonder is that are they just worried about the tourists in town? Are they, you know, I'm trying to think people are going to go to Disneyland and I'm curious who those people are. Are we going to get a lot of maybe Olympic athletes that are visiting Disneyland during this time?
I wonder
time?
If Disneyland will do
a
that
lot of
thing
their
again.
Families.
Do you remember they did the Olympic swimming pool down Main Street?
Yeah.
I wonder if and it's summer again. So I wonder if they're going to do something like that.
Maybe.
That'd be cool.
I think this is even though it is going to it does mean that the parks will be much more busy more than likely during these times. I am excited about this to see like that's a good point. Is Disneyland going to do something fun and over the top to celebrate? I like it.
I like when Disney does stuff like that.
DL Weekly announces the boarding of the Trivia Express, nonstop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Welcome to Trivia Land. How are we feeling tonight? You got some great answers in your heads?
I don't know, because when you were putting trivia together, you were giggling to yourself earlier, so I don't know if that's... I feel like that's bad news for us.
If you're giggling, that must mean that there's some joy of all of this.
I very much enjoyed this week's deep dive. It was a fun little wormhole to fall down. It stemmed from I was vetting an answer to a listener-submitted question, and then I found a different rabbit hole to go down, and I completely forgot what question I was even looking at because I was so engrossed in the article I was reading. And
have you rubbed off on him, Teresa? This sounds like what you used to do.
And I came up with an entirely different set of questions, and And we are going to test your knowledge of the Disneyland band.
I don't think there's a lot of answers in my head about that one, so I'm not too optimistic tonight.
Well, let's find out.
Yes.
Your first question. What day was the first performance of the first Disneyland band?
Well, I feel
just
like
for clarification, this is the marching band that we're talking about.
I'm going to say opening
July
day. July 17th, 1955.
That's what I would say, too.
July 17th, 1955. Is that your final answer?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Your second question. How many members play in the Disneyland band?
How many members? Ooh.
20?
I don't even know why I'm sitting here pretending like I'm trying to count because I can't. They move around so much.
Vern, I'm going to say 20.
Amazing 20? Choreography.
I wish I knew more about bands in general because I feel like if I knew about bands in general, maybe I'd have a better idea, like an educated guess. But this is literally just throwing a number out there that sounds about right.
I'm going to say 20. No, what'd you say? You said 20.
I said 20. So are you also saying 20?
I'm going to say 18 to be different. Just like random number that popped in my head was 12, but I feel like there's got to be...
I think there's more than 12.
I think there's more than 12, but not many more, I don't think. So that's why I'm going to go, 18.
18.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So 20 and 18, are those your final answers?
I think so.
Okay.
For now.
The original band consisted of both brass instruments and woodwinds and was a traditional blank-style marching band.
There's styles of marching band?
American? Yes.
American?
College? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know any styles of marching band.
I'm trying to think of the Music Man.
I'm failing my past self because I was part of marching band in
Were
high
you?
School.
What did you do?
I played tenor saxophone.
What does that mean?
What do you mean, what does that mean?
What's a tenor saxophone?
So there's different types of saxophones. A tenor
I'm
is...
I'm gathering this.
Yes. A tenor is deeper sounding.
Okay.
It's not like
not as
the
deep
bass
as the berry.
Saxophone. Like a bass. Like, yeah, like berry. It's a little up from that.
Okay.
So while you're doing that, I'll tell everybody my band playing history. So my first instrument I learned, band instrument that I learned, was the flute. Fun fact, I'm allergic to nickel, so I was actually allergic to the flute and like broke out in hives from playing it. So I played the flute for like 2 years, and then I had to picked a different instrument.
You have weird like allergies that pop up out of nowhere.
I do have interesting allergies. So then I decided to, I don't know why I decided tenor saxophone. Hmm. I really like the sound of a tenor is amazing. So like when you go to like if you watch jazz, if there's one saxophone, it's probably a tenor.
Oh, so here's my question. So like right now, if somebody were to hand you a tenor saxophone, would you be able to play it?
Probably
still?
A little bit.
Interesting.
So yeah, again, this is so off topic, not podcast related. The finger positions for the two instruments were very similar, so it was actually quite easy to go from one to the other. But
that's interesting.
Playing the actual, like, the how your mouth has to go for the two, totally opposite. It's like blowing across the bottle versus, like, this tight little, like, you got to make a reed vibrate on this. Yeah.
Mm.
Way different. Okay.
What was the question?
What type of band? Oh,
I have no idea.
I'm going to say American because I...
Classic. A classic marching band.
Say classic?
Why not?
I have no idea.
Do you have a hint or anything, Vern, or no?
Can we multiple choice maybe?
Was a traditional blank style marching band.
Can we Google styles of marching band?
No, that'll totally give it to you. I'm trying to think of a hint that's not gonna just spell it for you.
Okay.
Oh, I just can't compose a hint.
Oh. I feel like that's a is it like a conducted marching band or something? Like where you'd have a conductor as opposed to a marching band, maybe you wouldn't have a conductor. What's the thing with the dude who's like in the front with the thing of a marching band? Who's got the like big baton looking thing?
The drum major?
Drum major.
I...
You look so confused.
Yeah.
You were in marching band. You don't know what type of marching bands there were? Okay.
High school. That was what it was. It was high school marching band.
Classic and American. Those are your final answers?
Those are sad attempts.
Yes. Yep.
All right. And your fourth and final regular round question. Disney's 60th anniversary debuted a new Disneyland band featuring a drum corps style show tunes. Which instruments were removed in the new ensemble?
Which instruments were removed? Does the new one have the big boom, 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 boom drum, like the one that's
I'm
on their shoulders?
Sure. There, and there's cymbals.
And then there's also the drums that, like, it's the four of them, right?
Yep.
That
they and the snare.
Okay. And there's, like, some type of horn, because there's, like, what's...
There's a trombone.
Is that what the long... I don't know.
A trumpet?
Trumpet. I think there's trumpets.
Oh, for sure there's trumpets.
What's a trombone? Oh, okay. Wow, people are going to be listening to this and they're going to go, you are really dumb when it comes to musical instruments.
I'm expecting you to edit this all out so it's not as obvious. Jill, oh goodness, Jake. I'm trying to think. I don't think there's a piccolo.
Are there any wood instruments?
There are. I think there's, I'm pretty sure there's clarinets, but I don't remember if there's, a saxophone's a wind instrument.
But a wood instrument is anything with
wood. A wood with wind a reed, is right? A reed, right, yep. This is going to sound crazy. I don't think there's a piccolo or a flute.
Is that normally in a...
Yeah, those are normally in bands. So I'm going to say they removed the piccolo and the flute.
I have no idea. So that's a zero for me.
So we've got no idea and the piccolo and flute. Final answers?
Yeah.
Final.
All right.
For now.
And your bonus question tonight. Where's your favorite spot to sit and watch the band perform?
Was this why you were... This was probably why he was giggling.
Where's your spot?
I told you would like the bonus question.
Spot? Is there a right answer to this?
So...
I said, where's your favorite spot to sit and watch the band perform?
But when you say your, you mean like Teresa's, mine, yours?
Where is your favorite spot to watch the band perform?
This is a silly question.
Don't think there's a wrong answer here.
They're probably... Well, yeah.
It depends. If they're playing... I think at the... I think train station. I think I like the train station.
I feel like I see them a lot at the train station, but I feel like I enjoy in front of the castle, like when they're playing in the forecourt there.
I think I like the train station because they...
No, no. You know where I like watching them best? When they're actually marching. Because I like a marching band, like down Main Street. That's probably my favorite. And Producer Vern just pointed at Producer James.
We had predictions.
Producer James must have predicted that that's what I would say.
Yeah, I'm going to say the train
station. Good job, Producer James. Do you get a point for that one?
I should. First one on the board.
The question is, did Vern accurately guess Teresa's?
I had a 50-50.
So what
I
are you
did
picking?
Enjoy sitting on the porch, but they did not stop and perform. They just walked past.
Well, yeah, they're a marching band.
No, but on the Disneyland app, there was like a pin that said that, like, this time the band will be performing here kind of thing.
Yeah, Main
Street. And they just walked past us. They weren't even doing anything. They just marched past.
Oh, that's annoying.
Yeah, so I was like, it would have been very cool.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer, I think, is the train station. I like the castle, but I think I like the train station just a little more. I think why I like the train station just a tad more than the castle is there's trees. So there is shade that we can stand in while watching.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got Teresa for the train station and Tag for marching down Main Street.
Yes.
Final answers?
Yes.
Okay. Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Stick around until after the discussion topic, and we can all find out together.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are concluding our interview with Fletch, the game designer from Sorcerer's Arena. So enjoy the second half of this interview. The other mechanic that worked really well, and Teresa kind of touched on this earlier, was we got to the last round, and when we went into the last round... I had whispered to James, I said, if I kill Maleficent, that gets us over the victory points number that we needed, and we win. But if Teresa knocks, whoever it was Sully out, then they would take it. But then he reminded me that it doesn't end the second that happens.
No, you have to make it through the whole round.
Yeah.
So even though you go into the last round, maybe in that first character that gets to play the round.
Yep.
That person gets you over the finish line. That doesn't mean you're going to win.
No.
You've got, in the game we played, you had like seven more people or whatever, eight more people to go through, and things could change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you have if you wind up with a tie game, you just play another round. There are no games.
Aww.
So I've played team games where on the last possible turn, my team came up with the 4 points or 5 points needed to push it to extra innings, basically. And then in the next round, my opponent does the same thing right back to us. And in the last possible turn, gets over that 1 point hump and edges us out and there's nothing we can do with our last turn to make up that point.
Yeah.
And it's really, really exciting to have a game where that back and forth can happen when just when it looks like you've got this all locked up. No, it turns out that yes, you crossed that threshold that triggers the final round, but you got there and you've drained the gas tank getting there, and your characters are all vulnerable right now, and your opponent goes ping, 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 and all of a sudden they have the win.
So this next question, you can tell me if we can't talk about it. That's totally okay. Fine. But another game that we, Disney game, that we enjoy playing is Villainous.
Okay.
And I know that is not one that the op did. So
no, but I actually worked for the studio where that game was made.
Did you?
So I've worked with all of the designers who made that game.
That game is fun in its, it's very, very, very different play. There's pros and there's cons to it. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I wonder is how does a company like Disney, because there's what is it, Ravensburger that does it, and I think they've
the
done
puzzle people
they've done other Disney games. So how, when Disney approaches, how do they decide who gets to do what? So why
oh,
was
boy.
It you know, does that make sense?
We could do an entire different podcast just on this. In a nutshell, what it comes down to is it's licensing.
Sure.
So the same way a new movie comes out and that movie studio works with this company over here to make action figures, and they work with that company over there to make beach towels, and with that company over there to make breakfast cereal tie-ins. Disney has relationships with all of these different board game companies. There's us, there's Ravensburger, there's dozens.
I want to say it's like Funko or something
companies.
Does like the haunted, Funko the ones does. That are...
Funko, well, Funko is the studio that originally I worked for as Forrest Prezan, and acquired Forrest Prezan and became their own publishing studio there. The same designers that make the Funkoverse games with Disney, they were in that same pool of designers who did the concepting for Villainous.
Oh.
And again, I came from that same studio myself. So like I had built a lot of experience making Disney games, making Disney kids games with Forrest Prezan, but that's, you know, that's my own history there. Yeah, Disney reaches out to all the different partners that they have, say, you know, what kind of projects do you have coming up, or what can you invent that mm-hmm. lines up with this property, or we know you've done that kind of game before, and we think that this movie would line up very nicely with that kind of game. So all of those agreements are made on a, you know, project by project basis. Well,
part of it might be as simple as I feel like recently we're seeing a big influx in Disney board games. Mm-hmm. We're seeing all sorts of different ride themed board games mm-hmm. and these battle type board games and all sorts of things. Because I feel like it used to be maybe games that were more for kids, like kind of more that like simple, basic, more for children kind of thing. But it seems like there's just so many of them. So it might just be something as simple as we need to spread it out because we want to get all these things out. And it takes, what did you say, a year and a half for this one amazing game? So, it'd be impossible.
Some of it comes from the fact that board game culture has evolved dramatically in the last 20 years. Where a company, where a studio with an IP might have looked at board games in the past and said, oh, well, board games fill this aisle at Toys R Us or at Walmart or at Target. Now, all of a sudden, you've got these heavier, more strategic games coming into the marketplace that are occupying more than just the kids game shelf.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you walked into Target, you would find board games that range from kids games up to $80 collector's games that are very, you know, deep theme, heavy rules books. There's, you know, one of my favorite games is Gloomhaven. Target carries a game called Jaws of the Lion, which is sort of the introduction into Gloomhaven. And it's got two or three separate rule books in there, which combined add up to about 60 pages.
Wow.
But it's a brilliant, brilliant game. Yeah. And it's actually, Jaws of the Lion is actually, it's one of the games that I was inspired by when I made this game, partly because I like the mechanics and the way things work and fit together, but also because that's also a game where they made this brilliant, brilliant tutorial system that works you into the game. If you've never played this game before, you can sit down, open up the rule book to the section you need and start playing and play that first story and go, that was fun. What's next? And they add a little bit each time. That evolution of what people expect from board games has changed dramatically in 20 years. And I think that that has a lot to do with why you're seeing so many different kinds of Disney games emerging at once.
That makes sense.
Yeah, there's some crazy ones out there. So for me, like the one we always think about is like the most epic game that's complicated it takes like 3 or 4 hours is Star Wars Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing game, really fun, but it just you're going to be there for hours.
Yeah, that's your
Oh yeah, but that's the experience. When I said earlier, like, what do you want the experience to be? One of those questions that you answer is, do you want this game to be done in 20 minutes or do you want this game to be done in 3 hours? Mm-hmm. And for Disney Sorcerer's Arena Epic Alliances, we knew that for a game to feel like it was worth the setup, the play, and the teardown at the end, we knew we wanted that experience to be about half an hour. So that was one of those things that I was working towards, was as I designed and developed the game, can I get this game to play a full game in about half an hour? And team games take a little bit longer sometimes, mm-hmm. Just because you've got more characters doing things on the board. But when you start playing this game head-to-head competitively, I've seen players play matches that ended in 15 minutes and they just go, let's do it again. And I've seen games where it was a very control-y match. One of the teams was all about stifling what the other team could do. Mm. And that would take 40 minutes. So it all comes down to the play style and from a designer's side, what you want that experience to be. When the Star Wars Rebellion's designers sat down and said, what do we want from our experience? That 2 to 3 hour game was part of what they wanted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because they know that there's an audience that wants that afternoon length game.
One question I keep thinking about as we've gone through all of this is, there's expansions. How do the expansions change the game, or do they change the game, or do they just add extra characters?
They add new characters, and those new characters can bring along entirely new mechanics and themes. So for example, in Turning the Tide, Moana comes in and brings arena tiles into the game.
Oh.
Arena tiles, in her case, she's got ocean tiles that she can put on the board. And those ocean tiles will interact with oceanic-themed characters. And the oceanic-themed characters are Moana, Davy Jones, Stitch, and Ariel from the core set. Those characters interact in different ways with those ocean tiles. There's also a new mechanic called constant abilities, where in the core game, characters don't really have any abilities that work outside of their own turn. But now in the expansion, we added these constant abilities, which are always checking during every character's turn. So for example, Stitch has an ability that says whenever he takes 3 or more damage, he gains the tough status effect.
Hmm.
So he now has an ability that can work sort of reactively and defensively on another character's turn. And those are the kinds of things where once we've introduced the concept of an arena tile or the concept of a constant ability, we can continue using those tools out of the kit when we design new characters in other expansions. If I look ahead to the Thrills and Chills expansion, which we announced a few weeks ago, the Horned King, I can't tell you what the Horned King does quite yet, but I can tell you he introduces an entirely new kind of mechanic that changes the way you'll think about occupying spaces on the board.
Interesting.
Wow. So that's another one of those sort of tools that we put into the kit. It's game technology that we've created that we can go back to and use in later sets when we think, you know, what would work really well here is a character that does that thing that the Horned King did. And what did we learn from how it worked when we did the Horned King, and how can we improve upon that or put a new spin on it and make it feel unique to this new character, different from how it did with the Horned King?
So when you design these new kind of things, like in the Turning the Tides expansion, they've got this, you know, ongoing thing. Is that built in so it ends up making those characters kind of an even playing field with the original deck? Or do you ever consider like, okay, well, maybe we need to add like a sticker that comes with it that we can stick on the original people, that like if you stick this on there, then they have a reoccurring ability kind of thing? Do you know what I'm saying?
Or is there new cards? New cards,
I guess, too.
Mm-hmm. Ideally, because you never know what order players are going to pick up new characters in. Mm-hmm. We know that a player should always start with the core set, because the core set's where you get the board and the rings that go on the bases. So there are components that you're only getting in the core set that you don't get in those expansion boxes. Because the expansion boxes are about a quarter of the size of the full sort of treasure chest at that core. So you don't know what order characters are going to be acquired in, which means you can't really do effects that would retroactively impact other characters permanently. Mm-hmm. We have to be very mindful, and it's not easy. You design characters not knowing what the future is going to look like. So you have to design characters that really kind of pick one or two things that they want to do and steer into that and do those things well, so that later characters can occupy different spaces or combine those goals in different ways. Mm-hmm. But as far as sort of retconning, retroactive continuity to characters, once a character is printed, we have to be ready and confident that character is what that character is meant to be.
Gotcha.
So a question with the cards and stuff. So forgive me, because the only version I've played is the board game and is the core. I don't have any knowledge of the mobile game at all. So when you're designing these characters, you took them from the mobile game. Did all of their abilities and everything transfer over, or did you have some creative space to design what they do?
Quite a bit of space by necessity, even in the mobile game. Movement is not of the way the game plays. So knowing that we wanted a board game and a physical space to play that game in, we needed to have movement be an element. So anytime you see a movement card in the game, in the board game, very high chance that does not exist in that form in the mobile game, just because there is no analog to that. Oh, look at that. I'm mixing my metaphors. But as far as like the attack and action cards go, that's usually where you'll see the inspiration come directly from the mobile game. And the characters in the mobile game will have three or four various kinds of abilities. Some of them are constant abilities that are passive and run in the background and you don't actively choose to use. So for any given character, we'll try to pull two, maybe three abilities that come directly out of the game. And then in a 10 card deck, there's between 6 and 8 different cards for any character. That means if we can pull two or three from the mobile game, we still have to figure out, you know, 4 to 5 or 6 other abilities to design cards around for that character. And then on top of that, each character gets their skill and they get their upgrade ability, and they may have a constant ability if we're talking about expansion characters.
So that kind of leads into my next question. Since you were just saying that you did have some creative abilities, how did your passion for Disney and your love of Disney, mm-hmm. you know, kind of play into your process? Because some of these cards, I know a lot of our listeners probably haven't had a chance to pick up and take a look at the physical board game yet. But a lot of these cards, the Disney nerd in me really appreciated, because they were perfectly themed to each character. So I was playing Dr. Facilier, and how the cards were named or whatever, it was just very, like, very in line with that character. So I feel like that's got to be where your, like, Disney passion really kind of played in.
Yeah, it's great, because when there's a character that I look at in the mobile game and go, boy, that character would be great for this kind of role that we need filled in the archetypes of the tabletop game. But, you know, as much as that character would be awesome for this, I don't know that character all that well narratively. You know, the worst part of my day is having to stop and watch a movie on Disney Plus and just really soak in what makes that character tick. Sure. That's just worst thing. I hate that part. No, that's a great perk of doing what I do is research.
Yeah.
And sometimes it means you have to sit down and watch a movie or a cartoon series or a TV show to really understand at a fan level what people want to see from a character build. And that's really exciting. It's really enjoyable to do that, to look at a character like Sully and say, okay, they've framed out Sully's personality in the mobile game. And I know this, you know, thing about his personality from the movie he came from. And I know the mechanics of my game. So how, where do all of these things come together, and how do they overlap, and how can I pull inspiration from these different places to make it feel cohesive and true to the source material? That's so much fun.
I feel like it's kind of related to that a little bit. So you have to pull a lot of stuff from the mobile game. Do you ever get the ability, or has it come up or anything, where there's a character that you want for the board game that's not in the mobile game, that you kind of communicate, like, you're going to get to this character eventually? Well, you know, it's is there some way we can work this?
Your friend Tom may have mentioned to you at some point, because he mentions to me all the time, he wants to see Flubber.
Oh, he did. Someday. He did. He wanted me to tweet. He wanted me to tweet about it. I'm like, first of all, Tom, I am not on Twitter.
He actually, just today, he tweeted a picture of his game on the table, and right behind it, he hid a copy of the Flubber DVD. And I responded to him on Twitter. I said, I see what you did there. I see what you did there, Tom. No, like the short answer to that is we've been incredibly lucky in that with 155 plus characters in the mobile game, if I look at this and go, you know what, we really need, you know, an army general type character that can fill this sort of role, I go to the mobile game and there's five or six perfectly plausible characters to fit those roles. So as much as there are movies where I would love to say, oh man, I love this obscure character from this movie from, you know, way back
the
when.
Horned King.
You know, the Horned King is one that we could put in because he's in the mobile game. And when I was looking down the roster in the mobile game and went, oh man, the Horned King is here. Yeah, that's cool. Let's do this. There's no shortage of characters readily available for me. And the advantage that we have with using those readily available characters is that there are already art assets. So we don't have to create, you know, we talked about that cohesive styling where every character is drawn to look like they go together. As long as I'm using characters that have already been created for the mobile game, we don't have to do that heavy lifting of recreating a new style. And then, you know, the behind the scenes part is there's this whole approvals process where whenever something gets drawn or created, it has to go through approvals and Disney has to look at it and go, you know what? Yes, this passes our standards. This is good. Go with it. And we already do that for all of the custom art that goes onto the cards. Because if you look at those cards, Aladdin has some actions where he's, you know, bouncing off of this one character and jumping off of the city guard to go running in a different direction. And that's not necessarily a scene that was in the movie itself. So we had to hire an artist to create that custom art, and he redrew what that scene would look like, but in the style of this cel-shaded sort of style guide that was laid out by the mobile game. So really, yeah, like if we've got resources that we can use from the mobile game, I'm absolutely happy to start with known quantities rather than trying to branch out to characters that haven't been put in there yet, because we can only build so many characters a year. And if we're putting out, you know, three expansions a year with three characters a piece and there's 155 characters to pick from, it's going to take us
years.
15 years to catch up to where they are now. And they're planning on releasing more characters for that mobile game. So, you know, we could be making, if that license is there and available for us for the next 20 years, we could continue making characters for this game for 20 years and never have to worry about a shortage.
Wow. You as a Disney fan.
Yeah.
What would be your, like, what character would you like to see come to life for this game? Or does that character already exist?
So there,
you know, Tom loves Slumber.
There are dream characters that I can't actually list because I've actually already got them brewing.
Well, that's exciting.
Tell you one of my all-time favorite Disney movies is Atlantis.
Ooh.
And there are characters from Atlantis available in the mobile game. Milo and Kida are definitely on my list of maybe someday when I have a need for them in the game. I'd love to design those characters. Characters that I'm crossing my fingers that make it into the mobile game someday. I think the entire Encanto roster.
Yes. Could you imagine their abilities?
Oh boy.
In the board, like in the game world.
Oh boy. Yeah. You know, if Bruno could actually project and predict what's going to happen 3 turns from now.
Yeah.
That would, I've got to figure out how to do that, but.
Well, that could be a card where you play it against the other person and that dictates their next like 3 moves.
Oh, there you go. Maybe.
There you go. You're a game designer.
I don't know how it would work. It'd be incredibly frustrating for the person who gets that card played on them. But but that's a way you could do it. That was just literally came to mind when you said that. Is there a card or an ability or an aspect of the game that you really enjoyed and liked, but through playtesting did not make the cut that you're kind of bummed about?
That's a tough one. I mentioned we've got, you know, in the prototype 21 characters, and there are other characters that were designed that just didn't jive with the rest of the team at any given point. I will tell you that the original game concept, the core set has 8 characters in it, and only 6 of those characters were in the original first design.
Oh, wow.
Which means there are 2 characters that were designed to fit into that core set dynamic that are sitting on a shelf waiting on the side to come back. And if I want to get really sneaky, I will say one of those characters that got sidelined will be back in a expansion. We're already figuring out how to use that character in a future set.
Awesome. So is it something that you can take that character off the shelf and use, like, yes, it wasn't ready, you know, it didn't work for the original, but it will work later? Or did you have to kind of tweak it?
Well, it usually needs a little bit of massaging.
Sure. But it wasn't like, okay, we got to start over.
Right. I had the structure. I had most of the cards. I had sort of the goals of what is this character all about? What that character wants to do. This thing. Well, you know what? Expansion Z is where the game needs that kind of character again. So let's bring that character in, tune them up. I've had 2 years plus now of playing this game and learning things about this game. So the technology that goes into this you know, revision of this character has improved, and we know more about what works and what doesn't work now. So we can make it, you know, to quote the 70s, we can make it, you know, better, faster, stronger. It's the $6 million character. There's not a whole lot that I've had to straight up abandon and say, no, this doesn't work. I start with, what do I want this game to look like and how do I work backwards? One thing that we tested that we threw out was defense. We had mechanics built into the game, and as you've played the game, you may have noticed there is no way to guard.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. For the most part, or deflect damage or reduce damage outside of status effects like tough that reduce damage. There's no responsive way in this game to reduce damage or deflect attacks. And the reason we did that was we discovered it just slowed the game down. And sure, it was tremendously frustrating when I played this really awesome card. For example, Maleficent's got a card called Dragon Form. Dragon Form lets Maleficent heal back all of the damage she's taken so far and then deal that much damage back to another character.
That's so cool.
Remember, I used it on James.
She effectively, she gets huge again. She turns into a dragon and she roasts somebody. It was really, really frustrating when I'm playing as Maleficent to Dragon Form somebody and they say, well, instead of taking damage, I discard a card.
Oh, yeah.
That's incredibly frustrating. Yeah, like, I wind up for this huge hit, and the hit turns into a discard instead of a knockout.
But I will say, like you're saying, for me, like the attack kind of player, I like the fact that there isn't the defense because it's incredibly rewarding where, like, you can see two character turns, yep, not a whole turn, that you've got this card and you've got this plan.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just hoping that the things don't move around the wrong way.
You're Gaston and you're holding sheer bravado and you're looking across the board going, who could I pick on with sheer bravado? Oh, you left your Mickey open? Well, guess what? Mickey's taking 6 damage right now.
Yeah. Boom. Yeah.
Get out of here.
Because it's so disappointing to me when you have this plan and you've calculated all the numbers in your head and you're like, yes. And then something happens. Like, the character moves or somebody else gets to it first or they heal or something. And then all of your chain reaction stuff can't happen because you really needed step one to go right for step 3, 4, 5.
So we wanted the momentum of this game to always be moving towards knockouts, KOs. Yep. And we knew that there needed to be some aspect of healing. Ariel is in the game. She is the healer. She's probably the best healer we will ever design for victory points in this game. She is like the archetype of healing that all other healing characters will be built to follow. But apart from some healing here and there, the momentum in this game is all pointed towards getting the knockouts. So there isn't any stopping of that momentum. It's just the train starts moving in that direction. And even though your character gets knocked out, like we said earlier, they come right back in close to the fight and they just keep pummeling as they go.
Yeah. And that's satisfying on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One major thing that I'm sure marketing would like us to talk about is where people can pick up the game.
So the game is available all over the place right now. The first place that you should go to look for the game is at theop.games. You can purchase the game directly through us. You can get the core set and expansion 1 there now. The games are also available through Amazon, through friendly local game stores. So, you know, wherever you really enjoy picking up games and supporting, you know, game retailers, you'll probably find the game there.
Is there, so I know sometimes with other games, I don't know if this is the case with yours or not, but is there, sometimes there's like special editions or special somethings that you, if you purchase specifically at this retailer, you get some sort of something.
Like with the Villainous game, there was like Target edition that you came with one of the characters.
Is there any sort of thing like that?
Gen Con is coming up in a few weeks, and we're going to have our first championship tournament event. And there are going to be some very cool prizes to go along with that.
Oh.
Ways to spruce up your own copy of Disney Sorcerer's Arena Epic Alliance core set. And we're not ready to show off quite what's available yet. But because this is an audio podcast, this is where I can show you some of those things and you can ooh and ah about how cool they are.
But of course it's audio, so nobody can. It's amazing. There's fireworks and laser shows. I mean, it's just a spectacular.
Fireworks that are coming off of off of the things. It's cool. No, I think it's cool though because there's something I don't know. It's the nerd in me. It's the game nerd. It's the Disney nerd combining. Something about these like extra special things are just very exciting. So that's very cool.
Let's wrap up with our last question.
Our true last question.
So if you could work at Disneyland, what would you do? So the sky's the limit. This could be a real job. This could be a made-up job. What would you like to do if you could work at Disneyland?
Let's go towards the Imagineering path.
That makes sense.
Creative. I love experiences that happen sort of in conjunction with the ride. So the Haunted Mansion in Disney World in Orlando has some really awesome interactive features where there's almost a series of puzzles happening in the queue going into the ride.
Yes.
I would really enjoy crafting some of those user experiences that happen while you're waiting for the rest of the ride to happen.
That's a great job.
That sounds perfect for you. Mm-hmm. it blends your abilities with the
you know,
and it's needed. Like that's something that's needed because it's keeping people busy as they're, you know, building up anticipation and excitement, and you're keeping them still within that world or within that theme or within that, you know, whatever they're about to experience, you're just helping build that excitement. So yeah, I think that's really cool.
I just thought of one other character that I would, if I had the dream character list.
Yeah.
Benjamin Franklin Gates.
Oh.
Is that Jesse, from
steal
Treasure...
the Declaration of Independence?
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
What is it? National Treasure.
Yep.
National Treasure. Treasure.
Yeah.
We, it was awesome. Funny because in our Discord, somebody was just talking about National Treasure not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And I think those are great movies. So.
Oh, they're fantastic. They're great family adventure movies.
Mm-hmm.
Is this is so off. Is Mary Poppins in the mobile game?
No.
Mary Poppins.
Nor is Yondu as Mary Poppins.
There you go.
Being a Guardians fan, of course, you have to throw that in there.
I do have one follow-up question for the final question. Since you're a board game person and a Disney person.
Yes.
If you were to design if sky was the limit and you could do whatever you wanted and design a Disney board game, what would your dream Disney board game look like?
You know what? This is going to sound like a cop-out. This has been the dream board game for me. This has been such an awesome, awesome experience because it pulls from so many different places at once.
That's true.
And asks so many different kinds of questions about the root inspiration from each of these characters. Cop out, but this game in so many ways has been a dream project for me.
So obviously we talked about this a little bit. You can go to theop.games to look at different things and help support the work you're doing there. Obviously, if you want to keep having expansions and stuff come out, buy some expansions, get people to buy the game, that kind of thing. Really awesome. You mentioned Twitter a few times. Do you want to share where people can find you on Twitter that maybe want to throw out some comments to you or try to get in contact with you?
Sure. I am at GameMakerFletch, so you can follow me there. And then let me get you the ops handle. I think it's just the op games.
I'm going to go follow you right now.
Yeah, the op games is just at the op games.
Awesome. Well, thank you so, so much, Fletch, for all of your time telling us the behind the scenes and the process in what you do to kind of make something like this come to life so that the rest of us Disney fans get to enjoy it in our homes.
Oh, it was really fun. Thank you for hosting.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, D.O. Weekly.
Welcome back to Trivia Land, where we're going to find out how you did with your knowledge of the Disneyland Band. How do you feel you did?
Not great.
No?
I'm curious to learn some new things.
I think Teresa did better than I did, but I don't think I did very well.
Well, let's find out together, shall we?
Yes.
Your first regular round question. What day was the first performance of the first Disneyland Band? Each of you guessing July 17th, 1955. And the correct answer that we were looking for was July 17th, 1955.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like 56. With that pause, I was like, oh no.
I watched a video today talking about Disneyland, like opening day things that are still there. And people think like Dumbo was an opening day, but it wasn't.
No, poor Dumbo wasn't ready.
And the Main Street vehicles weren't there the first day either. I was like, wow.
That's probably good that the Main Street vehicles weren't there the first day with.
Oh, you'd still see the tire tracks and the asphalt. Right.
Well, you know, Bob Gurr was busy dealing with the Autopia and couldn't be dealing with
No, he was babysitting.
Well, that too.
Your second regular round question. How many members play in the Disneyland Band? Tag guessing 20 and Teresa guessing 18. The correct answer that we were looking for was 18.
Woo, Teresa!
Woo, that was lucky guess.
Wow, Teresa.
You weren't visualizing in your head and counting?
I was trying to and getting distracted.
All right. Well, good guess. And your third regular round question. The original band consisted of both brass instruments and woodwinds and was a traditional blank-style marching band. And the hint that I gave you was, I can't compose a good hint. I was looking for the composer John Philip Sousa.
Oh.
It was a Sousa-style marching band of the 1950s genre of traditional patriotic Sousa-esque songs.
Sounds See, this American makes me mad me. Because this makes me mad because I love the Music Man, and they're like John Philip Sousa.
Yep.
I was like, dang it.
I didn't realize that there was a style named after a person like that. So yeah. Interesting.
And you were in a marching band, so I feel a little less bad.
Well, that's because she played tenor. If she would have played Barry, she would have known. And your fourth and final regular round question. Disney's 60th anniversary debuted a new Disneyland band featuring drum corps style show tunes. Which instruments were removed in the new ensemble? Your guesses were Tag not knowing and Teresa saying removing the flute and the piccolo. The correct answer was removing the flute and the piccolo and the other higher woodwinds, leaving only the saxophones, brass, and percussion for a much bolder sound.
I mean,
how did I do that?
Even though I said I didn't know, I feel like what was left was stuff that we said was there. Oh well. Good job, Teresa.
And your bonus question tonight. Where's your favorite spot to sit and watch the band perform?
I'm feeling pretty good about this one.
How are you scoring this is what I want to know. Is it just like a free point?
Both of you getting this one correct by knowing that Teresa likes the train station, Tag likes to watch them march down Main Street, James happens to like when they play at Launch Bay, and Vern also likes the train station show.
Launch Bay is cool, because I was gonna say that. If, like, I'm listening to Star Wars music, I want it on, I don't know, it's just better in Tomorrowland for some reason.
Very true.
Hmm. So, very but true. Vern, did you know Plus Teresa was going to say train station? Was that your 50-50 chance?
I was debating between train station or at the hub.
Mm, look at that.
So that was my 50-50.
See, the question should have been, we would have had to guess the other person's.
Oh.
So, like, if I had to guess yours and you had to guess mine, that would have been good.
Next time.
True.
Should have some trivia questions about each other. Like, what's your favorite treat at Disneyland?
You taking notes on that, James?
Depends on Dole the Whip. Day.
Probably Dole Whip, though.
Yeah, probably.
Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How do you feel about how you did listening at home? Do you think you've got some great questions that can really stump them next time? If you think you've got that perfect question, feel free to send that in to us at trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.